Hi everyone, this is JP, and you are listening to the Exploring EOS podcast. Today, we have a great interview from Miles Snyder. He's with Multicoin Capital. He's the head of research over there, and he's been doing all kinds of research on altcoins, blockchain projects, and specifically on EOS. So today, we're going to talk to him mostly about EOS and everything that he has discovered, and from his perspective, how EOS is going to affect the blockchain world. Now, before we get into the interview, I just want to mention that as an EOS enthusiast, one thing that you can do to help spread the word about EOS is head over to iTunes or whatever podcast app you use and to rate and review our podcast, the Exploring EOS podcast, and be sure you subscribe as well. And this will help us get out into the world and spread the word about EOS. So before any further ado, now on to the interview. Miles, welcome to the Exploring EOS podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's really great to have you on. I initially found out about you and Multicoin Capital through your podcast and your webinar on EOS. I was trying to find more info on EOS, particularly in podcast form, and there wasn't a lot out there. Yours is one of the ones I came across, but ultimately I decided to start this podcast because I couldn't find much in terms of podcasting on EOS itself. So thank you for that. And if you could just start us off by telling everybody a little bit about yourself and Multicoin Capital, and you know, how did you get into blockchain?
Yeah, sure. So Multicoin is a crypto native hedge fund. I started working for, I was actually the first employee at Multicoin. So I joined in August of 2017, right after Tushar and Kyle launched Multicoin. But before that, I got involved in blockchain initially when I was still in college. In 2014, I was studying abroad in Argentina and I was studying economics. And I happened to meet some people who were involved in Bitcoin. And I think I had heard about Bitcoin prior, but I just hadn't spent much time on it. But that's really when I went down the rabbit hole. And it was an interesting time because being in Argentina, where the peso was losing a lot of its value, the government had not done a good job of managing the economy. And a lot of people were very interested in a non-governmental solution to hedging against the inflation of the peso. So there was a fair amount of interest in Bitcoin there. And that's when I first learned about it and kind of went down that rabbit hole. And so after that, I just started exploring the space a little bit more widely. And one of the first things I became interested in was stablecoins. And that was really a result of having been in Argentina and seeing that a lot of people there preferred to just buy dollars and hold dollars in cash, literally sometimes in mattresses, rather than keep pesos in bank accounts as a way of savings.
Yeah, I went down to Argentina back in like 2005-ish for summer study abroad kind of thing.
And okay.
Yeah, I definitely experienced that as well. And a lot of storefronts and stuff would kind of say, we'll take dollars and we'll make it a little cheaper for you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been several times throughout the history of that country, especially in the last few decades, where they've had, serious declines in the value of the peso. And at least during the 2014 time period when I was there, the peso had dropped pretty significantly against the dollar.
Yeah, it's never a good thing when you have like the official exchange rate and the actual like market exchange rate being way off from each other.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because even though it was technically the black market exchange rate, it was so common for people to do it that they actually, every day the newspaper published not just the regular exchange rate, but also the black market exchange rate on the front page of the newspaper.
Wow.
It's really interesting. And then you could go to certain streets where they exchanged dollars, and take your cash and exchange it for pesos or vice versa, and you could do it in front of a police officer and no one's going to say anything, even though it was technically illegal to do. It was just something that everyone did.
Wow, that's crazy. And that's pretty cool that is one of the things that led you into blockchain, because this is kind of the genesis of, you know, Bitcoin and things like that is really coming from this sound money basis of separating, you know, state and money, or at least having a money that is sound, that doesn't allow for these kind of shenanigans.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of like having seen all of that, I became really interested in Bitcoin, obviously, because it has these properties that make it very desirable, and the fact that it has a fixed money supply. You know, it's not controlled by a government. But obviously, the major price fluctuations in Bitcoin made it not a great hedge against the inflation of the peso. People really were much more interested in dollars. And that's sort of what led me to exploring stablecoins. And back in 2014, BitShares, BitUSD, and BitCNY were really the first serious attempts at a decentralized stablecoin. So I started exploring those pretty closely. And that's sort of what led me down the rabbit hole of graphene-based blockchains, the stuff Dan Larimer had built, delegated proof of stake, sort of this technology stack that a lot of which has been incorporated into EOS.
So for those who don't know, the BitUSD and those other stable coins you just mentioned, those were, I believe, built by Dan on BitShares. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
And then Dan has since now gone on to create the EOS IO software that runs the EOS blockchain. So it's a pretty cool history you have there of following through. I have kind of a different trajectory into this, where I just kind of got into Bitcoin a while back and eventually found EOS and just learned more and more about it. And it kind of seemed to solve a lot of the problems that I found with proof of work type blockchains like Bitcoin and whatnot. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so Multicoin Capital came out with a report and I think a webinar along with that, which I kind of mentioned. Could you just give us a little overview of, you know, why with Multicoin Capital, why are you guys bullish on EOS? Or why do you personally like EOS?
So I've been, like I said, I've been following Dan's work for a long time. So even before I joined Multicoin, like I said, I joined Multicoin in August of 2017. And I think EOS was actually announced in May of 2017, if I remember correctly. But I've been interested in that project, you know, for a long time. And at Multicoin, we spend a lot of time studying smart contract platforms. We're very interested in smart contract platforms and the different things that can be built on top of them. Obviously, throughout 2017, Ethereum was really considered the gold standard in terms of smart contract platforms. But we saw a lot of scalability issues with Ethereum very early on. We also saw a lot of usability issues that related not just to, you know, how fast it could go, but other things around user experience. So we were definitely interested in projects that would challenge Ethereum, especially on the scalability route, because that seemed to be the biggest bottleneck for Ethereum. And EOS really was built from the ground up to cater to scalability. Now, there's obviously a lot of blockchain projects that come out and make these outrageous claims about scalability and throughput and what they're going to be able to do. But I was already pretty familiar with the delegated proof of stake graphene tech stack, like I said, from looking at BitShares and looking at Steam. So, and I'd played around with those projects a lot. So I knew that this was possible. And given that Dan was, you know, using that same basic architecture and improving on it to build EOS, I really thought there was something there. So we just spent a lot of, you know, we decided it was worth spending time on. And then we really dove into it and we became, you know, pretty convinced that it was going to be the first and most serious Ethereum competitor to market. So we actually released two different papers. The first was an exploration of delegated proof of stake, which is the consensus algorithm that powers EOS and several other projects in the space, including Steam and BitShares. And then we followed that up with a deep dive on EOS specifically, just looking at all the different features of EOS, you know, how it's built, what it's aiming to do, what types of projects make sense to build on EOS and all of that. And I think that, you know, the way that we see it is that EOS takes a pretty straightforward approach to scalability. And that's through delegated proof of stake, where you basically, you have token holders who can vote on who gets to sit at the table producing blocks. And by having that set of block producers be more limited and more concentrated, you can get a whole lot more throughput and a whole lot more performance. And that, you know, you can see how fast these things can go just by playing around with some of the delegated proof of stake blockchains. And now that EOS is live, you can actually play around with EOS too. And, you know, clearly delegated proof of stake gets you much higher throughput. Yeah. Now, it does that by, some would say, sort of compromising on decentralization in terms of the number of validators at any given time. And that's true.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that was something that for me was initially kind of a big red flag, because I saw, you know, 21 block producers. And I'm like, what? Like, that is not nearly as decentralized as, you know, Bitcoin or Ethereum or whoever else, where you can just, you know, sign up, or, well, not sign up, but, you know, install the software, get some hardware or whatever, and start being a, not a block producer, but a miner. So a lot of those fears have been kind of put to rest a little bit from hearing what Dan has to say and other people like you, but that was definitely a big red flag for me. Like, how do you approach that?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's this is sort of a pretty big topic and we could spend quite a while talking about this, but yeah, like you said, I mean, for most people, as soon as they see 21 validators, it's sort of like they're almost ready to dismiss it based on that alone. But there's a few things to consider. One is that there's 21 validators at any given time, meaning there's 21 nodes that are actually producing blocks. But EOS does compensate, you know, 100 plus backup nodes that are all full nodes and are ready to step in and produce blocks should those 21 be voted out. The other thing is that ultimately voters have control over who gets to produce blocks, and they can vote those 21 in and out at any given time. So, you know, you could become a top 21 block producer, but that's not set in stone. As soon as there is either a, you know, objective or even subjective maliciousness that's perceived for any given block producer, they can be voted out. So I think that's one thing that's really important to consider. The other thing is that I very firmly believe that decentralization is, it's a means to an end. It's not an end in and of itself. And two, it's really, really hard to measure. Some would even say that it's impossible. I think there's so many different vectors of centralization that you could talk about, that coming up with an overall objective measure of decentralization is really an exercise in futility. And so I think that, you know, the number of block producing nodes is just one measure of decentralization, but there's a lot of other ones. And then to the earlier point about decentralization being a means to an end, you know, the end goal is really, censorship resistance, lack of a single point of failure, things like that. And I believe that in practice, delegated proof of stake and EOS can get you to those ends that you want. Mm-hmm.
I've heard people like Dan Larimer talk about with other blockchains like Ethereum and Bitcoin, because of the mining pools being so large, that they're claiming that EOS is actually more decentralized, because with 21 block producers, each block producer only has like 4.something% mm-hmm. control of the network, you know, whereas these mining pools have much larger percent. From somebody like who's looking at this with a very critical eye, as you are with trying to research for Multicoin Capital, how is that a good argument, or from your perspective, does that hold water?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does hold water, but you're getting into pretty murky territory here, I think, because, yeah, there's 21 validators on EOS at any given time, and I think both Bitcoin and Ethereum are controlled by about 3 mining pools each. And so, but it's not really an apples-to-apples comparison. And once again, the number of nodes that can produce blocks, or the number of, I guess, entities that are producing blocks at any given time, is really just one measure of decentralization.
Right.
So I don't necessarily know if it's fair to say that alone makes it more decentralized. But I think there is an argument to be made there. You know, even if you just look at the map of the top 21, or even call it the top 30, producing nodes on EOS, you have a pretty good geographic distribution. Or at least, I think I checked, last night, and it looked pretty good. So I think there's definitely an argument to be made there. I also think another thing to consider is that although proof of work is theoretically permissionless, anyone can start mining at any time, they can join the network. The reality on the ground, of course, is that you know, unless you have really good hardware, that can be competitive with some of these bigger miners, you could start mining, but you're never actually going to produce any blocks. And so I think it's a little bit, I don't think it's really correct to say that anyone can just, you know, spin up a miner and participate in these networks. They are, they're not permissioned, but there are significant barriers to entry, with proof of work. And you know, you could also theoretically say that anyone could become a block producer on EOS. The barrier to entry is that you have to get the community support to get people to actually go out there and vote for you. So there's barriers to entry in both sense, but I wouldn't necessarily say that one or the other can objectively be called more or less permissioned.
Okay. Thank you for that. That's very interesting. Another thing on the like decentralization of block producers and things is that I did an episode with Thomas Cox on the governance side, which I find extremely interesting. It's kind of a new thing, right? So we'll see what actually happens there. But I do find comfort in the fact that even if you have like some voter apathy going on, and there's a block producer who is censoring or behaving badly in some way, there is another way to get them out besides just voting them out, and that is to file an arbitration case against them. And if they're violating the Constitution, then I think my understanding is that an arbitrator could basically kick them out or fine them or something like that. There'd be some sort of repercussion. So that's just another, like, not really decentralization, but kind of a check and balance sort of thing.
Yeah. I definitely think the attempt with governance is to create some sort of system of checks and balances there. But like you said, I think that's probably the most immature part of the EOS ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I think it's very, very much in its early days. It hasn't really been formally defined yet. I think there's a lot of questions around how sort of like socially scalable that is. And at least from my perspective, it's probably the most experimental thing about all of EOS. I'm interested to see where it goes. I'm looking forward to seeing like more developments on that front. But I definitely think it's very early days for that.
Yeah. So now that the mainnet has launched, just a few days ago, is there anything that you're kind of looking out for, watching for, that, you know, maybe you're hopeful because of, or maybe you're worried about, you know, things, have there been a lot of changes since it's gone live, or is it kind of still the same, seems to be working as planned, or what's your take on that?
I mean, there's definitely been some hiccups over the last couple months, and you know, the launch process it didn't get launched as quickly as I originally expected it to, but it did get launched, and I think it was pretty interesting. You know, I was participating on a lot of those calls, and it was interesting to see, you know, 200 or more, you know, independent groups of people come together across, you know, every time zone, and with a lot of language barriers and things like that. You know, without the help of a centralized party like Block One, and the community was actually able to get this thing up and launched. And you know, I've spoken, you know, directly with many of the block producer candidates, and They're really competent individuals who did a really good job of doing that. So despite the hiccups, I remain, I think the future looks positive for EOS. That being said, the software is very new. We're seeing updates and bug patches and things like that as time goes on. So I think that for a lot of people, it seems like EOS has been around for a really long time because it was announced in May. They had this year-long ICO. There's been a lot of buzz about it and all that. But I think it's also important to remember that this network launched just a couple weeks ago. It's very young. I think there's a lot of growing to do. There will be growing pains. And it's not going to just, pop up and all of a sudden reach, critical mass and have all this user adoption. These things take time. From the investor side of things, I've certainly seen a lot of projects that are over the past few months were considering EOS. A lot of projects were that would have probably built on Ethereum are realizing that Ethereum's not going to be able to serve their needs from a scalability perspective. And so a lot of those projects were set, I think, over the last few months saying, maybe we'll check out EOS, maybe Cosmos, maybe Definity. And they were sort of looking around at Ethereum alternatives. And EOS, like I said before, is the first Ethereum competitor to go to market. It's the first one that's actually live. And I think now that it is live, we're going to see a lot of projects considering building on EOS instead. And we may see some projects that migrate over from Ethereum or from other platforms. But I also think we'll see new developers that are entering the space that are saying, where should we build this? And they're going to be looking at all the options. Right now in terms of smart contract platforms, you've got Ethereum on one side and EOS on the other. And there's some other stuff that's in the pipeline. But I think right now there's a good case to build on EOS for a lot of different projects. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of those announced and looking forward to just seeing some of those finally come online. And then in the meantime, I think it's important that just the block producers continue making sure that the chain is stable, that the software doesn't have any major bugs in it, and then also working to build the tools and sort of the infrastructure that will make these dApps usable. So things like block explorers, things like wallets, things like voting interfaces, and we've seen a lot of those so far, but those can definitely be improved and more can be built. So that's sort of what I'm looking for in the short term.
Okay, very cool. So mentioning the apps and are some of those that you've seen, are those kind of things that you can't really talk about because of your position here? Or are there any apps that you could kind of tell us about that you're excited about that are coming to EOS or plan to?
Yeah, there's some that I can't talk about that are sort of in stealth mode that I know about that are building on EOS that I am excited about, but I'll let those developers announce that when they decide to. Yeah. But I'm also excited about some of the things like Everipedia is building on EOS, which I think is really cool. My friend Cesar Rodriguez, who is a developer, he built the first EOS block explorer. He's working on a dApp. He just built a sort of decentralized Twitter clone on EOS. He challenged himself to build an MVP of it in 3 hours, and he managed to do it. And it's sort of very bare bones right now, but he's going to flesh it out. And I think that is pretty cool.
Is that the Descend Twitter?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. I just saw that the other day, and very bare bones, but yeah, that's pretty cool. I was going to talk about it on another podcast. So
yeah, definitely. And just the fact that he built it so quickly. I mean, granted, he's pretty familiar with the EOS stack as compared to other developers, but I was really impressed. And I think that decentralized social media is one of the really cool use cases for EOS. I'm excited about some of the decentralized exchanges like EOSFinex. And then I'm also excited to see, hopefully someone can build a good bridge from Ethereum to EOS so that sort of tokens could go back and forth. Because I actually think that having a decentralized exchange built on EOS that's high throughput, has no fees, has everything logged on chain is really useful. But right now Ethereum has the token ecosystem. Right. So it would be pretty cool if you could take some of your Ethereum tokens, transfer them over to EOSFinex to actually do your trading, and then go back to Ethereum. And I think we may see cool things like that, that come up maybe even sooner than we expect.
Very cool. Yeah. So as we move forward, like you mentioned, you know, decentralized exchanges and social media, what other like long-term, I don't know if like, what do you think is the long-term vision for EOS?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that it sort of remains to be seen what will be the killer use case for EOS. I think one thing we can say right now is that there are certain applications that just make a lot more sense on EOS than they do on something like Ethereum. And I'm only really going to talk about EOS and Ethereum right now because those are the only ones that are live. But you know, obviously in the future, things like Definity, Cosmos, Hashgraph, and a bunch of other smart contract platforms are coming online. But I think, you know, decentralized social media, decentralized gaming, decentralized exchanges, I think non-fungible tokens, things like CryptoKitties, those all make a lot of sense on EOS because of the high throughput and the zero transaction fees. Now, there are other things like, you know, gambling dApps and prediction markets that I think, you know, could make a lot of sense to be built on EOS. But I think there is a still a little bit of uncertainty as to whether EOS is actually the best platform for those. Does delegated proof of stake at scale, you know, provide the sort of censorship resistance to, you know, state actors that would want to shut those things down that Ethereum will provide? And I think there's actually a good case to be made that EOS can and will do that. But I think we're not going to know until we see it actually play out. I'm sure that a developer will pretty soon decide to deploy a, you know, gambling dApp on EOS, and we'll see what happens. Now, if it turns out that EOS isn't the best platform for those, then maybe some of those things will migrate to Ethereum, where they really need that censorship resistance, even if it comes at the expense of performance. And EOS will sort of have a lot of those other use cases that I mentioned before. And then I also think there's probably a bunch of stuff that's going to be invented that we haven't even really thought about yet. And I know that sounds kind of hand-wavy, but the truth is that we're still very early in this technology. And if you compare it to the internet, there's a lot of things that came about that no one could have expected in even the late 90s. And I think the same will happen with smart contract platforms through the use of DAOs or really, you know, cool new business models like the Numerai business model. So I think we'll see a lot of things like that. And then finally, I think one thing I'd really like to see on EOS is a stablecoin. And I feel, you know, I haven't heard of any stablecoin projects on EOS yet, but I'm sure someone will build one. And I think that'll be pretty cool when that happens.
Yeah. So real quick, you mentioned the Numerai model. Can you? I've never heard of that. What is that?
So yeah. So Numerai is a hedge fund. They are based in San Francisco, and they're one of the sort of few true utility tokens on Ethereum that is actually used in the way that it was built to be used and not for speculation. But they're a centralized hedge fund that gets really high quality data, encrypts that data, and then gives it to data scientists who build models on the data, even though they don't actually know what the data is. So because the data is encrypted, you don't know if it's data on the price of Apple stock or if it's you know, Amazon or whatever it may be. But they're still able to run models on that. And then the data scientists stake on their models. So they sort of stake a certain amount of this Numerai token based on the confidence in their models and submit those to the hedge fund. And the hedge fund takes the best models and actually trades on the equities market using those models. And the people who produce the best models are rewarded, while the people who produced poor models are slashed from the tokens that they stake. And then the company additionally pays out users in the tokens and also in Ether.
That's fascinating.
Hopefully, it is really fascinating. I don't know if that was the best explanation. That's sort of a very basic explanation. If people are interested in learning more about Numerai, they should check out their website and read about it. I think it's probably one of the coolest companies in the crypto space. And it's definitely sort of a hybrid, centralized, decentralized model for a business. But it's something that is pretty uniquely enabled by blockchain and pretty uniquely enabled by a smart contract platform like Ethereum. And I think it's probably the first of many that will figure out new business models using this technology.
Well, what you're saying about things that we, you know, really have never thought of before, that is something I know you said, oh, that sounds hand wavy, but to me, maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid, but to me, it's like, that's totally true. And one example, is like the whole airdrop concept, right?
Yep.
And I'm not a financial advisor of any sort or anything like that. So I could be totally wrong about this, but my understanding is doing an airdrop model could potentially really help get you around a lot of regulations, because you can't really consider something you're giving away for free a security, right? So that, just that in itself, a way to raise money without actually taking in any money, right? Just using like the price discovery mechanism of the market and whatnot is really a fascinating thing that probably, I don't know, probably nobody's had come up with before this blockchain technology has been out here. So, and I think with EOS in particular, even more.
Yeah. And I think the legal opinion is probably still evolving on airdrops,
sure.
Because it's so new. So of course I'm not a lawyer either. But I agree with you. And I also think, you know, even if it does end up being that it is, not necessarily like a route around, securities law or anything like that, it's still just a really fantastic way to bootstrap a community. You know, you have, if you're airdropping to EOS holders, for example, you sort of get, more support from the core EOS community than you would have gotten otherwise. And I think it's been really interesting to see that ethos of airdropping, that culture of airdropping that's emerged in EOS as compared to a lot of other platforms. Mm-hmm.
So with that, you know, you mentioned Ethereum has kind of the token market right now, and that's mm-hmm. totally, you know, totally dominated by Ethereum. But do you see in the future that kind of shifting over to EOS? Not necessarily the people who are running their tokens on Ethereum switching to EOS, though I'm sure that'll happen some, but kind of EOS being the place to go to issue tokens like that.
You know, I'm not really sure how it's going to evolve. I think there's a good chance that EOS develops a token ecosystem. You know, EOS is could be a really great platform for the issuance of securities tokens, like, you know, tokenized equity in real companies, that can offer some interesting things in terms of markets and price discovery and liquidity that a lot of you know, equities well, there's a lot of things that sort of aren't liquid that could be made liquid by tokenizing them and trading them. And that's kind of interesting. It may end up being, like I said earlier, that we sort of, someone builds a bridge from Ethereum to EOS, and EOS sort of then has access to that token ecosystem that's been built on Ethereum. However, I think it's also worth saying that a lot of the tokens that exist on Ethereum are, you know, offer very little value proposition, and probably should not have been created in the first place. So while Ethereum does have a very big token ecosystem, you know, I don't know how much of that is legitimate. You know, obviously throughout 2017, we saw it was the year of ICOs, and everyone and their grandmother issued an ICO and raised a bunch of money and created a token and blah, blah, blah. I think those days are definitely over. One, because of the regulatory environment, but two, I think a lot of people are just realizing that there's not a lot of value proposition in a lot of those things. So I actually hope that doesn't happen with EOS, because I don't want to see a bunch of projects just issuing useless tokens. I'd like to see more useful tokens and more innovative token models, which I certainly think there are. But I think that given that I suspect that a lot of projects will ultimately build on EOS, I wouldn't be surprised if it developed its own robust token ecosystem that was competitive with or similar to that of Ethereum.
Yeah. Well, so my understanding is that eventually there should be some sort of way for the EOS blockchain to communicate with other blockchains like Ethereum mm-hmm. or Bitcoin. And whether that's communication, this is a question I have, which I think I posted in the EOS Go forum or somewhere like that, where will an EOS smart contract be able to control a Bitcoin wallet, basically, or something like that, where it's more than just, you know, taking information from another blockchain, because that's kind of basic, but also really interacting with it. Because that could really open up a lot of very interesting things, like, you know, one concept that I wrote a post about on the website is having basically a Bitcoin backed EOS token, where the smart contract for that will basically control a Bitcoin wallet where you deposit your Bitcoin and it creates brand new EOS tokens running on EOS, that then you can actually use for transactions and things like that because of the transaction throughput and the confirmation times and things like that you get from EOS, but then you can always like cash it out for Bitcoin. That's just one very basic version of that. But
I very much expect that to happen. I don't know how long it's going to take before we have those in a way that are like truly robust and trustless and all of that. But it's sort of it's similar to the sidechains vision that Bitcoin had for a long time. That's sort of been pushed to the side, but some sort of cross chain communication could be really useful. I mean, right now both Ethereum and Bitcoin, they don't have explicit finality; they just have probabilistic finality because of the nature of proof of work. So, being able to have a transaction on Bitcoin that then moves over to the EOS blockchain where it can be traded, you'd have to wait for like six or more block confirmations on Bitcoin, and that could take a really long time. And who knows how exactly that will be handled, but I'm nearly sure that things like that will be invented in the near future.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think I actually proposed that as a worker proposal in the EOS Go forum. So we'll see if anybody wants to fund that. And that brings me to this concept of worker proposals, which we haven't really talked that much about on the podcast. Can you talk about that and like how you see that interfacing with and kind of boosting the EOS ecosystem?
Yeah. So worker proposals are basically, EOS inflation pays for block producers. It pays people to provide network infrastructure and validate and secure the network. And then it also pays for the development of the chain itself. So a certain portion of those block rewards are allocated to a community treasury. And this feature hasn't been opened up yet, but the treasury is being actively funded. So the block rewards are accumulating in a smart contract. It just hasn't been opened up to community voting. But the idea is that there will be this on-chain treasury that token holders can vote on to fund certain proposals. And I think that the reason this is really cool is because, like I said, I think that there's sort of the ICO business model is really fading out for the better. It's not the best way to raise money. And frankly, issuing a token doesn't make sense for a lot of projects. But what EOS says is that you can have someone who basically says to the EOS community, hey, this is what I'm going to build. I want to be funded by the blockchain itself. It's going to be valuable to EOS for this reason. And that person can actually be paid from the treasury to do things that either fund the development of the software itself or fund infrastructure tools or fund dApps. And one of the reasons that's really cool is because there's a lot of dApps, for example, on Ethereum that issued tokens. They don't really need tokens. The tokens aren't that valuable. They actually get in the way of user experience. Like if you have a token that people need to use for payments within the dApp, people don't really want to use that. They just want to use whatever token they have on hand, either being like ETH or a stable coin or something like that. But they issued a token because it allowed them to raise money to fund their development. With the worker proposals, you could have someone who says, "Yeah, we're going to create a DApp. It has no token, but we're going to fund the development of this DApp by having a worker proposal." So I think that's one really interesting thing. Another interesting thing is infrastructure tools that don't necessarily offer a return on investment. So they're not going to be something that's funded by like venture firms or anything like that, but that are really useful for the EOS community. So something like Scatter, which is the Chrome extension that you use to interact with basically every EOS DApp that's available. That would be a great candidate for a worker proposal. EOS Block Explorers, all sorts of different wallets and developer tools and things like that. So I'm really excited about that. And I think one of the things that makes it so exciting is that given that EOS is a very valuable network and that the EOS tokens are very valuable, and we have these tokens that are accumulating into the treasury that can be used to pay out these worker proposals, the EOS token holders are going to have a really big sum of money that they can use to pay people to do these cool things and build these cool things. And I think that's going to be a really important part of sort of the EOS community and culture and development culture going forward.
Mm-hmm. Who decides which projects to actually fund? Is that a token holder vote or a block producer?
Yeah. How's that? Yep. Yeah. It's a token holder vote. Okay. From my understanding of the current design, I'm almost sure of this, but yeah, it's a token holder vote. So like I said before, delegated proof of stake, which is the consensus mechanism that powers EOS, is a form of on-chain governance. So, it's sort of like a one token, one vote kind of thing. Your stake in the system determines your say in all sorts of things, which include who gets to be a block producer and which worker proposals get funded. And on-chain governance is a relatively new thing. I mean, we've seen some projects that have had it in the past, or that have it already. Dash has on-chain governance. Decred has on-chain governance. BitShares and Steam obviously both had it. But with EOS, it's being done at a scale that I don't think has been tried before. So I think things may be different with EOS, for the better or for the worse. I think a lot of us are doing our best to make sure it's for the better. But I definitely see it as sort of a new era in blockchain governance.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's exciting times for that. And it's exciting to be kind of a part of this experiment.
Absolutely.
Even if it utterly fails, it'll still be kind of an exciting thing, and who knows what will come out of it either way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important for people to realize, I say this all the time, is that everything in this space is experimental. Bitcoin is still experimental in a lot of ways. Don't obviously pour all your money into something that is highly experimental. That being said, there's a lot of different experiments that are being tried. Some of them are, I think, really, really bad ideas, and some of them are good ideas. And I think that EOS is a good idea, and there's a lot of reasons to think that this experiment could be successful.
Yeah. So given that, and the fact that this is, the Exploring EOS podcast, we're pretty much all in on EOS in terms of, we're pretty, hopeful that this is all going to work out. And generally, mm-hmm. I tend to talk about the positives, and I don't give a lot of room usually for the negatives. But do you have, as somebody analyzing this, is there any sort of negative things that are risks that you look at EOS and you say, okay, these are the kind of points of failure, or these are the risks for somebody getting involved? Or like, I don't necessarily just mean from an investment perspective, but technology investment, like anything.
I think there's always risks with any given project, and there could be a lot of reasons why EOS ultimately isn't super successful or even fails. First and foremost, you have things like software bugs, or just like critical bugs in consensus or the software or anything like that. Those are very hard to predict, and they're always a possibility. The structure of EOS with delegated proof of stake and all of that allows for those things to be fixed in an easier way than I think with a lot of other blockchains. But that's always a risk with anything. I think you also have the risk of, you know, DPoS and on-chain governance and on-chain voting have not been tried at scale before. It does remain to be seen how exactly these things play out. You know, some people suspect that there could be sort of a cartelization of block production within EOS. That's certainly possible. One thing that could aid that is voter apathy, which is this, that, you know, voter participation is not that high. I think it's one of the reasons that it took the chain longer than I expected to launch, was because a lot of people just didn't bother to vote. Now, I think there's reasons for that that go beyond voter apathy. I think the easier we make it to vote, the more people will participate. And that means having really easy to use and really, really secure voter interfaces. I think a lot of people haven't voted yet because they just don't feel comfortable using the command line wallet from Block One. And they don't feel that any of the other wallet options are secure enough for them to want to enter their private keys. So making that UX more simple, and then also having things like proxy voting, where someone can just proxy their vote to someone who they you know, they trust to actually do the research and things like that. But it does remain to be seen how high voter participation actually is. And if voter participation is not that high, well, then it becomes a lot harder to vote out bad actors or to combat cartelization of block production and things like that. So I think that's a risk. And then in sort of to what I mentioned earlier about DPoS at scale, and you have these 21 plus highly public, you know, well-known entities that are producing blocks, you know, how well does that stand up to a government or a group of governments that says, hey, you know, there's a lot of activity being conducted on this platform that we don't like. You know, maybe they'll go after the block producers. And then does the community say, you know, we won't have these dApps built on EOS, or do they vote out those block producers in those jurisdictions? And how does that all play out? It's very hard to predict. And I think we won't know until we see it. And we'll sort of have to cross that bridge when we come to it, and hopefully have the community discussions that prepare for that beforehand. So I think those are some of the things that I'm worried about and thinking about with regards to risks for EOS.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for that. I don't want those listening to think just everything about EOS is just like perfect and it's all going to be great. Cause I tend to talk it up. That's kind of what the show's about, but, you know, I want to be balanced as well. So I do appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important for everyone to be critical. Even if you're in the EOS community and really bullish on EOS, it's important to hear out, constructive criticism, because that makes it better.
Definitely. Well, hey, I really appreciate your time coming on the podcast and talking about this. I also really appreciate all the research that you've done and put out there for the public. I've been pretty impressed with, you know, your reports on EOS and everything. I really suggest everybody head over there and over to take a look at your report. And where can people go to check out your reports, your research, everything you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. Our website is just multicoin.capital. All of our research is there on the blog. We're on Twitter. I'm at @Miles_Snyder. There's Kyle Samani and Tashar Jain, who are also who are the co-founders of Multicoin, are very active on Twitter. That's probably the best place to find us. You can sign up for our email list on the website and get all the research delivered to your inbox as soon as it's published. And feel free to reach out on Twitter if you'd like to get in touch.
Okay, great. Well, you know, if you ever want to come back, talk more about EOS, the door is open. I would love to have you back, and appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was really fun, and hopefully we can do it again very soon.
Okay, there we have it. That's the interview for today. That was Miles Snyder of Multicoin Capital. And please head over to exploringeos.com to check out the show notes and get all the links so you can follow up on the reports that Miles mentioned that contain all the research that he's done on delegated proof of stake and on EOS itself. It's very interesting stuff, so I definitely suggest you check it out. And once again, don't forget to subscribe and rate and review this podcast. Share it with your friends so we can help get the rest of the world exploring EOS. The content of the Exploring EOS show, videos, and website are for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended to be and does not constitute financial, investment, legal, or professional advice of any kind. You should not take action on any information provided without first consulting a professional advisor and doing your own due diligence. Investing in cryptocurrencies is risky. Please seek professional help.